Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride. With your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody, to another great episode of the podcast by the Sons of Technology. My name is Joe Marquez. I am an educator out of the Central Valley of California and the Director of Academic Innovation for Q. And I'm so excited to have my partner in innovation here, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, please introduce yourself.
Well, hello, everybody. Once again, this is Kyle Anderson coming at you from Las Vegas, Nevada, where I am a special education teacher. You can find me on Twitter at Anderson EdTech. Same thing with Instagram, my blog, AndersonEdTech.net. And then I also have my book, To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking, that you can check out on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or my publisher, EduMatch Publishing.
Now, Kyle, I have to say, I really love your green screen background. It looks like a green screen as your green screen background. I really love that.
I have not invested yet in a decent light setup for my workspace and whatnot. It's just not something I've made a priority. And usually I could count on having my blinds open and sunlight lights up my room enough. But we are now at the point where, especially now that since daylight savings time has ended, where the sun is not staying up as long and it is not as strong as it once was. So we are recording this around 4 p.m. on a Friday afternoon. So where I'm at in Las Vegas, the sun will be down and gone in 45 minutes. So 4:45 is about sundown right now. And it's been a little depressing in that regard. That is, to me, that's the worst part about living in Las Vegas is when the sun goes down so early in the wintertime. So many people disagree and say it's because it's 1,000 degrees in the summertime, but I don't mind that so much. No. So yeah, I have not been able to do the background on the green screen for this recording or for later recordings for that matter when I'm using it. And then I've tried to do the virtual background thing on Zoom where that's built into the program, but I'm not sure what the deal is, but whenever I try to do it, it says that my computer specs do not match what are required. So maybe my computer is a little bit old, but I don't intend to replace my computer just yet because computer's running just fine. Really, to me, it's just as quick as it was the day I bought it a couple of years ago. Because I tend to take care of them a little bit because to me, a computer is an investment and you got to take care of things when you get them.
No, I completely understand. I have a computer that we still use that I bought in like 2008. It has been relegated to just a giant touchscreen computer for my daughters to use for ABC Mouse. But it's an old HP TouchSmart computer, and it's still going strong. It's doing its purpose. So I completely agree. If you take care of your technology will take care of you.
Well, and then those older computers too, if they're not super old, you can actually download the free resource Chromium off the internet and then basically flip an old computer and turn it into a Chromebook. I have one somewhere in my house where it's an old Windows PC that by the time it had basically reached the end of its life as a Windows PC, but I'm like, the computer itself is still in good shape. So let me toy around with this, Chromium resource and see what I can do. And I was able to flip that into a Chromebook and it essentially works like the day it was born, that computer. So you turn on, it fires up instantly and you can log in using your Gmail profile and it works just like a Chromebook. So you don't have all the other features of a Windows PC. Like you can't install like PowerPoint or anything like that, but you can use all those in the online version anyway. So that's an option for anybody out there that has an old computer laying around that may not work so well. You can turn it into a Chromebook.
Yeah, that's the Neverware Cloud Ready, right? Neverware Cloud Ready has that available, and you can get the free home version that you can use on your own personal one, and then they also have the enterprise version that you can deploy on all of your old PCs in your school. That's always a great option when, you know, you don't have the budget to get brand new devices, but your devices are only 5 years old, but the Windows operating system may be bogging it down. You can definitely get that Neverware Cloud Ready. I'll put on there and do that. And we actually did that at the school district that I was in. Well, I say we, I did that because I wanted devices for my teachers and the district would not purchase them. So I went around to all the teachers' classrooms and I said, give me all your old computers that are too slow, that are broken, that are in your closet, that are collecting dust, all the old computers. And I installed that Neverware on all of them and they worked like a charm. And if the students logged in with their school account, even though they weren't linked to the admin console, they still had all of the same restrictions that the school had put on their account. So it still kind of worked in that fashion. And it allowed us to bring to life 400 computers that were considered do not resuscitate computers. So I think that's a great option for schools looking for more devices, especially during this time of distance learning.
Yeah, for sure. I worked at a school one time where one of my colleagues did the same thing. And there was an old laptop cart, 24 devices that it wasn't even worth checking the cart out most of the time, because by the time the students fired them up, you lost a half an hour of your 90 minute block. So it was just too time consuming. So most people didn't even bother checking that cart out before. And then he went and turned that into a set of Chromebooks. And then what a lot of people did not realize was that they worked a lot better then. So they were not checking them out. And that cart essentially lived in my classroom. So I had a one-to-one classroom that wasn't necessarily one-to-one because nobody really knew about it. And selfishly, I didn't necessarily tell people that they worked a lot better because I wanted to hold on to them in my classroom.
Well, there's nothing selfish about that, right? You're doing it for your students. So I think that's a really great thing to do. And I'll say this as well. That frustration that you explained that teachers feel when trying to turn on an old computer and it just takes forever to boot up, I am convinced that that is one of the reasons it took educators so long to start implementing technology or accepting technology, because they just accepted it's going to take 20 minutes for those devices to boot up. So that's why it's really important to make sure that the teachers have the best devices, the fastest booting devices, so that they're not losing any of that valuable instructional time. And do you know what that frustration causes? That frustration causes doubt in the technology, doubt in can we use this technology. It creates frustration of guilt. Like I'm wasting my students' time. If I can get this lesson done in my traditional manner, why should I be wasting time with the technology? And I completely think that that's what stymied the proliferation of ed tech, you know, in the middle 2000s up until, you know, the 2018 when more schools started getting devices in their class. And when the pandemic hit, right, it's going to be 8 months here in next week, 8 months of this distance learning, and that has really caused teachers to come out and embrace technology, not because they wanted to necessarily, but because they had to. And teachers are resilient. Teachers are resilient, and they had to relinquish my favorite word, fear. Right? Before this pandemic hit, I would always say, hey, ditch that fear. Don't worry if the technology doesn't work. Your students have you. Don't worry if you don't know how to use the tool. Your students can figure it out. Don't worry. Ditch all the fears, because it'll all be okay, because you're an amazing educator. And educators had to ditch that fear because they had to use the technology at this point. So I don't think fear is an option or an obstacle that our teachers are overcoming, having to overcome now, because we're in fight mode. Right, there's fight and flight mode in biology, and teachers don't flee. So they're fighting right now for the education of their students. But I'll tell you what is creeping into a lot of educators' minds. Doubt. Doubt is creeping into a lot of educators' minds, and doubt has always creeped in to our minds every once in a while. We may be doubtful that something's going to work, but we can always rely on what we've done before to kind of alleviate that doubt. Doubt has creeped into people's minds when they're using a new platform, but they've had time to figure it out. I think right now doubt is creeping into teachers' minds because they don't have any other avenue at this moment to try something new. Right? They're given the technology. The students are given the technology. They're given the LMS. They're given the tools, and they say, go do it. And if they have doubt in using those tools, that can start building up. right? It doesn't have a chance to release. It builds that pressure. There's no release valve to release the doubt to bring us back down to normal. And I think this doubt starts building up. And when we doubt what we're doing, it really puts a burden, a heavy burden on our hearts. It really makes us feel like we're not doing our job. When I know they are, all of these educators are doing their job phenomenally, but doubt is hard to overcome. And, you know, I'm not in the classroom right now. And so people may be saying, well, you don't understand. You're saying doubt, but you don't understand. Kyle, you're in the classroom. You're, well, you know, in the class Zoom, I guess I'll say, right? But you're with the students. Have you had doubt creep in on your productiveness, on your fellow teachers' productiveness, on the students actually learning the material that you want them to learn?
Absolutely. That doubt has most certainly creeped in, because this situation, it's so much different, obviously. And I'm not going to throw a bunch of words out there that people are sick of from the last 8 months by any means, like unprecedented or anything. Oh, well, now I lied to you. I just did. So, but part of it is because so many of us, we don't know what we're doing. Okay. We've gotten better in the last few months, but frankly, so many of us, and I will be the first to admit, we just don't know what we're doing. Okay. How do we motivate students in this situation? How do we create engaging lessons in this format? I'm in 100% distance. And then, you know, a lot of people are starting to transition more into a face-to-face hybrid kind of format as well. But we don't know what we're doing. And the doubt starts creeping in that whenever you do try something and the students don't respond to it, you have the doubt that you're just not doing enough, or you're not doing it good enough, or something like that. So then that guilt starts creeping in too, as a result of those doubts. And right now where I'm at, we are really struggling to get kids to even show up to our sessions. So the way our school decided to perform this distance situation was, instead of hour and a half blocks that we would normally do face-to-face, we're going to do 50 minutes, and we're going to do them from 8:30 in the morning until 12:15 in the afternoon. And there'll be a 5-minute break in between those 50 minute blocks. And during that time, we take attendance with our students and we teach. Whatever that looks like for individual teachers, totally up to them. There's no set, like, you have to do this or you have to do that when you're teaching, but students are expected to be there for that time. So, but again, if we can get half of our kids to show up during that time, that's an accomplishment for a lot of us. So, and I don't want to get into reasons why students are or are not showing up, because so many student situations are so unique. Another struggle we have are the students that do show up. A lot of them, they log into Google Meet and then they don't respond to anything, whether that's because they don't respond at all because they don't want to, or they're afraid to, or if they have literally logged on to make it look like they're there and then they have walked away to go do something else. I don't know. And there's no way for us to really know. So that's a struggle. So then you start getting into the actual teaching of the lessons and the activities with students, where you have students in class and you're trying to engage them, but they're not engaging. Is it because the lesson is absolutely terrible and it's not good enough and kids are not engaging? Or again, is it because the students really just are not there because they've walked away, or they're sitting there with it on mute to make it look like they're there while they're playing a video game or watching YouTube on another device or something like that? So those doubts most definitely have creeped in. And then what happens is that when grades come around, progress reports or quarter grades, and we're already halfway through the second quarter of my school district, and you know the second quarter progress is in, and you start looking at student grades, and when more than half of the class is failing the class, and it could be another conversation for another day about how we grade and our grades even something that we should continue to do. That's a conversation for another day. For right now, we're going with what our district has directed us to do in regards to grading work and whatnot. And when students aren't completing work and when they're not doing the work in a fashion that earns a higher score on it, it becomes very frustrating when you look and you see that, say, more than half of the class is failing. And then many of those that are passing with a lower grade. And then directives start coming down from those above saying, you're failing too many kids. You need to be better than this. And then your doubts are coming in like, well, what do I do at this point to try to help students achieve? So I am not a believer in just giving out a grade to give out a grade just to pass students. So that's to me, when I'm told that I have to start passing more kids, that to me compromises my philosophy of education. So, and then there's a lot of districts that have done this where if a student is below 50% for the quarter, raise it up to a 50%. That way they at least have a chance for the semester grade and whatnot. But I sometimes feel like students almost take advantage of that in a way, where they know that they don't have to do anything to get the 50%. But then they also, at the same time though, they're going to struggle the next quarter, because even just going into the final exam, you got to have a 70% just to have a chance at passing at that point. So that doubt is most certainly creeped in. The guilt has creeped in, and that definitely has weighed heavily on me. And then on top of that, as a special education teacher, I'm trying to work with students that I don't always have in my class. I have most of my caseload in my classes so I can see them. But then again, a lot of them, they're not showing up. So I'm not actually interacting with a lot of students. I've never met these students face-to-face before. So I don't really know them. It's so much different. Knowing somebody in an online platform versus knowing somebody in person are way different. And working with students where I don't really know them becomes a struggle. Working with students that aren't showing up is another struggle. Working with students whose parents I cannot make contact with because it's a bad email address or a bad phone number, or they're just not answering, or it's less of a problem. Students, families that speak another language, I've been able to contact family members through text messages or emails using Google Translate, or there's people that work in my school that I can contact and say like, this family speaks, for example, Cantonese. I don't speak that, but you speak it. Could you call home for this parent? So, but that's another thing that really makes it tough. But when you start piling all these things together, I most certainly have doubts about my abilities right now. I most certainly have guilt about my abilities right now in being able to reach students. And, it hasn't caused any fear to try something at this point, but my experience as an educator, I ditched the fear a long time ago, but there may be people listening right now that they struggle with the fear part and the doubts and the guilt. Once those start setting in, that's only going to heighten the fear for a lot of them, in my opinion.
Yeah. And that's the trifecta of despair right there. Right. I mean, because, you know, teachers have fleeting feelings of fear, fleeting feelings of doubt, fleeting feelings of guilt, but they're fleeting. They happen. We rectify them and we move on. And I think just piling on, right. Which is why I hear this so much. Friday has never been so sweet. Every Friday, I'm so glad it's Friday. I've enjoyed Fridays before, but these Fridays are the best because there's just so much that teachers are going through right now because it's burdensome on your soul and on your heart. And then you take all of this time to figure out how to overcome your doubts, how to overcome your guilt. And you don't put any time into yourself. So you find yourself on Zoom all the time. You find yourself on the computer trying to create more engaging lessons all the time. You find yourself moving away from your, not moving away physically, but moving away from your family into your home office to get these things done. So even though you're home, it feels like you're away. And then you realize you haven't left your house in a week, right? And so you start, your soul starts to get crushed a little bit because you're not taking care of yourself. right? So a little bit about this is self-care, that educators need to take a deep breath and say, you know, say that little verse where it says, you know what, I am going to understand and not be frustrated by the things I can't control. And I'm going to hone in and focus on the things that I can control. I can control what I produce for my class. I can't control who is not showing up. I can control when I wake up and go to bed. So if I know I need to take care of myself, maybe I'll wake up a little bit earlier and go to bed just a little bit earlier, right? I can control these things. I can't control not having parents up-to-date information. I can control the way I talk to my students, the way I relate to my students. And so we have to focus on what we can control and not be burdened by what we can't control. And when we start realizing that, we get a whole load taking off of ourselves. That's not going to solve any of the issues by any means, but it will help to solve the issue of despair that we feel in our hearts right now. Because teachers, you, I'm going to say it, you work damn hard. Day in and day out, before this situation happened, you worked damn hard, and you're working doubly hard right now. And if you're disparaging yourself, if you don't think you're working hard enough, if you have doubts in what you're doing, you need to stop, because you are working your butt off and you are doing everything you can for your students. It may not be clicking at this moment, but listen, how long did it take you, educator, you listening right now, you, how long did it take you to hone your craft, to hone your skill into creating a great classroom environment for your students? How long did it take you to hone the skill of creating great classroom collaboration and communication? How long did it take you to hone that skill? That doesn't translate instantly over into a new medium. It doesn't translate instantly over into a Zoom room. It takes time to hone that skill. It takes time. And I talked about this before. It's like a teacher is an artist. If you're working with pastels and oils and watercolors on a canvas, and then somebody says, oh, that's fantastic, I want you to do the same thing with this marble over here, you may not be able to translate your amazingness from canvas to marble. That doesn't mean you're a horrible artist. That means it's a different medium they're asking you to be artistic with. And so a Zoom room is a different medium they're asking you to be a great educator in. And if it's not working, it doesn't mean you're not a great educator. It means it takes time to practice in a new medium. And 8 months is not nearly long enough to become an expert in a new medium. So have a little bit of grace for yourself. You, the educator listening right now, have a little bit of grace to help get rid of your doubt. And don't be guilty. Don't be guilty. Because teachers are saying, maybe I'm not doing enough. I feel guilty I'm not reaching my ELLs enough. I feel guilty I'm not reaching my special education students enough. Teachers, throughout your career, haven't you always questioned if you're doing enough? Kyle, haven't you always questioned if you're doing enough? And that's what makes us strive to be better, to learn more, to be lifelong learners, right? That drive of an educator to always want to be better is because we ask ourselves, am I doing enough? So if you're asking yourself, if you're guilty, if you think you're guilty because you're not doing enough, that's just a normal response of a fantastic educator always looking to do more. I know you're working with a lot of special education students, right? And I know you're working your butt off, right? So I'd like to hear a little bit more about that, Kyle.
Well, before I get into that, this is something that's been said by many people over the last 8 months or so, is that the comparison that what we're doing right now, we're all first-year teachers again. And very rarely is a first-year teacher a truly effective teacher. I think back to my first year, and what I find strange about it is that there's so many students I had that first year that if I saw them right now, I would recognize them and I would know them by name. And I mean, we're talking, I mean, I'm in year 16 now. So we're talking about students that at the time were 17, 18 years old, and now they're in their early 30s, and most likely many of them have careers and families and, you know, all sorts of things. And then I think back to students I had, like, say, a year ago, and I would struggle to recognize or remember names. I just, my mind works very strangely in that fashion. But I think back to that first year, and I wish I could see more of those kids I had that first year right now and apologize to them about how terrible I really was back then. I think about some of the things I did back then and just how ineffective I'm sure it was. A lot of it was because I was doing stuff that in the way that I learned and that was effective for me, but maybe not effective for classes as a whole. And we're all in that same situation right now. We're all trying to learn how to teach again, because like you said, it's a different medium. Okay. You made the analogy of an artist going from painting on canvas to sculpting marble. So you want to make a sports analogy. I played football in college, and I'm not by any means, I wasn't a great player by any means, but I was fortunate enough to be able to play football in college. But if all of a sudden they said to me, we don't have a spot on the football team for you anymore, but why don't you go play on the volleyball team instead? You know, we'll still give you a scholarship. Am I going to be an effective volleyball player not having played volleyball before? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, played a little volleyball here and there for fun growing up. What would I be a college caliber volleyball player? By no means. So whatever analogy you want to make to what the situation is right now, make it, because it's going to be true. So we're all just trying to learn from this right now. And, you know, I need to take some more of my own medicine here by trying to lessen my own guilt and my own, not necessarily fear, but doubts at this time. But be reassuring to one another. Talk to your colleagues and reassure them that whatever they are doing, it is good enough. You can always improve, but it's not, you're not terrible because of the way things are going right now. You're learning along the way, but your effort can be commended for everything as well.
No, I'm very, very true. Very true. I mean, that's why there's very rarely any really successful two sports athletes, not because they're not athletes. It's because different sports require different skill, right? I mean, you know, we have a lot of, you know, athletes that played baseball and football, but a lot of times those athletes that excel at both are pitchers or quarterbacks, right? Because they're using the same kind of muscles in the arm. But you're absolutely right. We have to have a little bit of grace and understanding. It's not the skill. It's not the skill that is being hindered. It's the medium that is hindering the skill. And then now what? It's a little bit like that TV show Chopped. Halfway through the episode, here's a thing we're going to throw at you to kind of throw you off your game a little bit. We're, instead of distance learning, guess what? At the end of December or in semester two, we're going to go hybrid. That means, yes, not only are you going to have to teach distance learning, but you're also going to have to teach face-to-face, right? So now it's an even different medium, double medium. It's like if you're here in California, it's a double medium, right? It's nuts, right? But we will adapt. But here's the problem. When we say the word hybrid, that has so many definitions across our profession. So Kyle, when I say hybrid environment, if you were told, hey, you're going to be teaching hybrid, what's your initial thought when somebody says you're going to be teaching in a hybrid classroom?
Initially, my thought is that you're going to see some of your classes 2 days a week, and then the other couple of days that week, you're going to have them working asynchronously on work that you have provided for them. And then the other half of your classes, you'll see them the days that those students are supposed to be working asynchronously. And then many school districts are going with the fifth day as a planning day or office hours day for students to be able to receive some help. So that's my thought. But as you mentioned, there's a lot of interpretations as to what hybrid learning is. The one that I find just absolutely mind-boggling is the model where half of the students show up in person, the other half are at home, and you're teaching to the students in the class face-to-face while you are being live-streamed to the ones that are at home. And to me, that is absolutely mind-boggling. I am a co-teacher in a 100% distance model right now, and we struggle sometimes to address all the questions that kids have in the face or in the distance model right now. Those that are asking questions by unmuting their mic, those that are asking questions that are in the chat. It's a struggle with two of us. I can't imagine a teacher working on their own right now, 100% distance, and trying to address all students' concerns and questions and comments and whatnot. To force a teacher to teach in person while live streaming to those that are at home, again, that to me is absolutely mind-boggling. But I know what's happening in places, and I can't even fathom what that is like right now.
Yeah, you know, it does take some time to wrap your head around that situation. But, you know, if you are being asked to teach in a synchronous hybrid model, which I would consider that a synchronous hybrid model where you're teaching the face-to-face and the distance learning students at the same time, it's very important that you have a platform that you're receiving data in consistently, right? Something like Pear Deck, right? If you are presenting to your students in class and at home, that presentation has to be in Pear Deck so that you can ask questions and pull the audience or see what they know from both face-to-face and at home. 100% essential. So Pear Deck, Nearpod, those are incredibly important. If you are watching a video, it has to be done on an assessment video platform, something like Edpuzzle or PlayPosit. Those are incredibly important. The very most important thing that has to be done, whether you are a synchronous or asynchronous or AB model hybrid, is data. Data drives your instruction as it would in a face-to-face model. And so, yes, it would be difficult, but it's not unfeasible, because you would be expecting the students to log in live. You would even expect your students in class to log into the Zoom as well, to be able to see chats happening with the students. You would have the students have the Zoom live being broadcast on their projector through the class microphone and amplification system. So the students who are not in the class can ask questions and the students in class can hear them. And you would definitely need to make sure that the teacher is utilizing a mobile audio system so that they're not tethered to their desk, or a mobile computing device where they can use digital ink so that they can showcase on the board, but also on the students at home. There's a lot that goes into it. And it's funny that when you bring this up, I feel very comfortable doing this, because I actually started doing this with my science department and a couple English departments at the school that I used to teach at. I was like, hey, you know what? We have 40 kids in our classrooms. Wouldn't it be great if we co-taught together? You be in your class, I'll be in my class. I will live stream the lesson using Nearpod and Google Hangouts. It's Google Meet now, but Google Hangouts. You join as a guest, you join as a co-host, and we can have both classes collaborating at the same time. And we would do it, and it was great, because I could be the lead teacher asking the questions, getting the data through Nearpod, having the other class ask questions via the microphone system. And the teacher who needed to ask individual questions with their students who were falling behind can do those small individual groups. And so when I hear this synchronous hybrid model, it just brings me back to those days when we were doing it for fun as kind of an experiment. Hey, would this work? Right. But if you've never done that before, it can be a very, very daunting task. Now, Kyle, I know that you love Pear Deck. Wouldn't you say that Pear Deck, no matter what kind of hybrid model or face-to-face model you're doing, wouldn't you say Pear Deck, something like that, would be an essential key part to any learning environment?
For sure. I mean, we're using it now in the distance model, where when we have our live Google Meet class sessions, we're using Pear Deck quite a bit to convey the content to the students, whether it's, you know, just on some of the slides where it's just content. So just pay attention at this point. I tend to like to set up those kinds of slides with a text box so students can take notes as they go right in Pear Deck versus having to do it on paper or opening up another tab or something like that. But then you have a lot of the other activities that you can do, like the drawing slides, the dragging slides, the number slides, the different things. So we're having a lot of success in our math classes that I'm co-teaching right now using Pear Deck, where students can draw on their slide to work out mathematical equations, or sometimes we'll give them a scenario with a couple of different choices, or have them drag the dot somewhere on it. So it's been very successful in the distance model. If and when we go to the hybrid model, it's going to continue, whether that's we're doing it like we're doing now, where it's instructor led, or if we're opening up Pear Deck lessons in student paced mode and saying, here's the information, there's various questions throughout this, work yourself through this during your asynchronous time so you can participate in the lesson in that way. And then each student, when you have on the takeaway option, they get a copy of whatever you're putting out there, and any answers that they put into the Pear Deck, they're going to get copies of that as well. So now when it comes to the student-led one, it's not, to me, I don't want to say ineffective. It's very effective. But with something like that, students aren't getting any feedback right away when it comes to any questions that they answer within the presentation. So I do find if you're going to be putting in questions, especially if you're introducing new material, the teacher-led one is probably better at that point, because then you can walk through any confusion on those. So I find that the student-paced ones are more effective, more for reviewing concepts that have already been taught. Then you can start getting into flip models where the students can view videos of a new concept. So right now in the algebra class that I co-teach, we're going over functions and evaluating functions and whatnot. So I would not want to do a student-paced lesson that introduces functions to students. To me, that would just, especially if I'm in that situation, as soon as I don't understand the first slide, boom, I'm done. I'm not even going to go on to the rest of it. But we've had some success introducing functions in the live session where it's teacher paced. So we haven't talked about using it as a student paced one as a review just yet, because we do a lot of other things for review instead, like using quizzes and Kahoot and some other activities that we do in class. But a program like Pear Deck would be great for that. And then I do talk about Pear Deck quite a bit. Nearpod is another great example. I just don't have the experience using Nearpod, so I can't bash Nearpod, but I can't endorse it though either. But I do know it's very similar.
Yeah, you know, they're both great, great, great platforms. You know, people always go, team Pear Deck or team Nearpod? I said, I'm team whatever you're using. I'm going to help you use it. Right? That's the team I am on. And I agree. I think, you know, back in, 2013, 2014, the flipped classroom, the flipped model was really gaining steam. Like, hey, you should be giving students all this asynchronous information, let them look at it at home, and then come to class with questions. And that's kind of what you would do in an asynchronous hybrid model, like you were talking about, is you would post these things, these artifacts, I'll call them learning artifacts, into your LMS, whether it's Canvas or Microsoft Teams or Google Classroom. And you would say, students, please review this material before you enter the classroom. You don't have to understand all of it, but make sure you're making notes on what you don't understand, what you do understand, questions you still have, and let's answer those questions when you're with me face to face. But I will tell you this, Kyle. You have to make sure that you're answering the students' questions in a face-to-face classroom, not just giving a lecture the entire time.
Absolutely.
I have even seen, and this is so hard to believe, I have even seen classrooms where the teacher goes, yes, you're face-to-face, read this, and then work independently on answering the, like, there's no purpose in being there face-to-face at that point, right? So a lot of it is that teachers just feel comfortable with students in the classroom but they're not utilizing their face-to-face time in the maximum level. So teachers, if you are, when you do have your students face-to-face, you need to maximize, concentrate all of your energy on, do you understand the material? Here's some new material. Do you understand this material? Right? Not read this paragraph and then reflect on it by yourself, right? So we have to make sure that teachers are understanding what can I do asynchronously, and then what will maximize my collaboration and communication and critical thinking in a face-to-face platform. Just having them in your classroom is not carte blanche to go back to status quo. Because I've seen that happen, right? I've seen that happen. You know, what would your response be if you were a tech coach walking around and you saw a teacher who's been begging for a hybrid or face-to-face to come back, and then all they're doing is having the students read independently? What would your response be?
It's funny that you asked that, because I was just having this conversation with a handful of people the other day about trying to shift the thinking of educators in the state of Nevada through our Nevada Digital Learning Collaborative on what's going to happen in the future. And one of the concerns that everybody in the conversation had was that it's just going to flip back to what it once was. And that this whole thing is that the viewpoint is that the whole idea of distance learning and implementing tools like Google Classroom and Canvas and a lot of these other great tools that we've mentioned, like Quizzes and Edpuzzle and Pear Deck and Nearpod and everything, that a lot of teachers are just going to view those as pandemic teaching tools and never want to touch them again once we get back into the quote unquote normal. And we're trying to brainstorm ideas on how we can start shifting that thinking. And, you know, to answer your question about if I'm a tech coach or if I'm a learning strategist or something, and I walk into a classroom when we're in face-to-face and I just see the old, having a conversation with that teacher about what were your successes during distance teaching or hybrid teaching that you had with different tools. And then how can you take those successes and what you learned from those successes, or what didn't work and what you took from what didn't work, the lessons learned, how can you apply that to what you're doing now versus just reverting back to read page 72, answer the four questions at the end of the section, and then write them down on a piece of paper and then turn that in while I sit here. So to me, it's more about not necessarily trying to force anybody to do something they're not comfortable with. It's more about trying to have somebody evaluate what they learned from just this horrendous situation that we've all been living now for months. And basically being first year teachers again, what did we learn from it? The good and the bad about the risks that you took and the tools that you used, and then compiling that into shifting what you do in that face-to-face.
You know, and I agree with you 100%. I mean, it's making sure they understand that classroom time is very valuable, very valuable. And making sure that what they're doing, they are getting an output from what they're doing. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Any tool that you are using must give you currency. And currency is data. If you're using a tool and it's not giving you data, the data would be, are my students understanding what I am teaching? If you're not getting a constant flow of data, then the technology you're using is flawed, right? I believe John Hattie calls this visible learning. Like, you should visibly be able to see that your students are learning, right? Pear Deck gives you visible learning because you're asking questions and getting instant responses. Edpuzzle gives you instant responses on, are they understanding the video, right? If you're doing a Google Doc response, you're getting instant insight into what your students are doing. You need instant insight. What insight are you getting by just having your students silently read, right? What insight are you getting by having them just write a short paragraph on paper pencil? Now, I'm not saying anything against paper pencil, but wouldn't it be great if you had, once again, just a Pear Deck prompt and they're typing in what their insight is? Now you're seeing all of them coming in real time. Wouldn't it be great to have your students, okay, have them read a paragraph silently, but then respond in Flipgrid so everybody can see each other's viewpoints? You see, visible learning is incredibly important. And if your technology that you're using or your analog system that you're using is not giving you instant information on whether your students are understanding the material, then we're just not teaching to the best of our ability, right? And teachers could say, yes, you know what? I do ask. I point to a student and say, what did you think? And I point to another student and say, what do you think? That's great. Are you pointing to all 40 of your students? Because if not, you're not getting instant access into every student's mind. Every student needs to be able to have a voice, and every student needs to be able to have multiple modalities to showcase their voice, whether it's video or text or drawings or what have you, right? So we just have to make sure teachers are comfortable understanding that, right? And understanding that, again, classroom time is extremely valuable, and putting kids back in the classroom is not for your comfortability. It's for the necessity of community. That's why we're trying to get students back in the classroom safely, mind you. Safely, mind you, depending on where you live and what kind of community you live in, we're trying to get students back in as efficiently and safely as possible. But when you do have them, we need to not throw away the old or throw away the new that we've learned and go back to the old. We need to be able to amalgamate. You like how I use that word there? Amalgamate the usage of our traditional with our newly learned digital.
That word is what my wife would refer to as a cocktail party word. So anytime there's a word that just not used real often, or, you know, one of those nice lofty words, she refers to those as cocktail party words. And so that definitely would fit the mold there. So now, that being said, it is still important to be vigilant. It is still important to keep doing what we have been doing for the last 8 months in regards to this virus. Being safe, keeping your distance from people, washing hands, and wearing your mask, and doing all of those things that we need to keep doing in order to bring students back safely. So, we're at a point right now where a lot of states, including my home state of Nevada, cases are going up, hospitalizations are going up, deaths are going up. Whether that's because people have dropped their guard a little bit and it's starting to spread in that fashion, or if because the cooling temperatures have allowed the virus to thrive a little bit more, I don't know. I'm not the scientist in regards to this, but we need to keep continuing to listen to the scientists that are researching this and continue to be vigilant and be safe about things so we can eventually get to those hybrid situations, or hopefully that face-to-face situation once again, to where we can be a school community once again.
You know, I agree 100%. You know, and as we bring this episode to a close, I want teachers to understand you are resilient. You are in a profession that is constantly changing. I mean, if you are a veteran educator of 20 plus years, you know these last 10 years have just leapfrogged in change. If you're a veteran educator, you know that policies come and policies go. Initiatives come and initiatives go. But what doesn't change is your strive and your movement to be the best teacher you possibly can. Why? For the benefit of you? Nay, for your students, right? And Kyle, I've always said, if you know, educators should be changing every day in small, tiny amounts. Every day, change a little bit. Find something to better yourself every day. And so 5 years from now, you should be completely different than who you were 5 years ago. Being constantly changing, but still the same, still an amazing, amazing educator, connecting and communicating with students on a daily basis, changing the world from the bottom up, making great citizens and great people, making great students who can communicate with one another. Doesn't matter where they come from, doesn't matter the color of their skin. All that matters is that we are all here for one singular purpose, and that's to have amazing lives and laugh and cherish each other. And that's what teachers can do. And yes, that is one of the reasons we want to get back into the classroom, to create those moments of laughter, to create those moments of community. Because I will be the first one to tell you, the human condition cannot live on Zoom alone. We need each other. And yes, we're getting to a breaking point, everybody. It's 8 months in and we are all frustrated. But we have to make sure that when we go back to the classroom, we are using that time wisely to be the best that we possibly can. And I want to end with, of course, a quote from Bruce Lee. Right? So Bruce Lee says, "We have to be formless and shapeless like water. If you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. If you put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. If you put water into a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Water can flow, water can crash, water can soothe, and water can cut, but it will always be water." Teachers, we can put you in a classroom or a class Zoom. We can put you in a zoo. We can put you in a house. We can put you with a mouse. We can put you anywhere. We can put you here or there. But you will always be a teacher. You will always be relevant. You will always be important, and you will always be amazing. Let go of your doubts. Let go of your guilt. Ditch that fear. And just have a little bit of grace for yourself. Because as we move from medium to medium, you are always being extra large to me. Because I love you. Kyle loves you. To the edge and back. And if you're listening to this and this resonates with you, please join the EdTech Army. You know, hashtag EdTech Army. Tell us that you're listening to this. Tell us that this is relating to you. Let your friends know, because all we want to do is to be with you. All we want to do is to be a part of your journey. And all we want to do is to just collaborate, communicate, and celebrate with one another. I'm Joe Marquez, as always, with my fantastic, fantastic partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. And we just want to say, we love you. And just keep your spirits up. You are weighted down. We hope we can lift you up. And we will do anything we can to help you in any way that we can. Because that's what the EdTech Army, or the Sons of Technology, are all about. We speak encouraging words to one another. Lift each other up, leave nobody out, leave nobody behind. And we know that you're already doing it. Just keep on doing it. Because we love you. Have a great night. Have faith. And change.